Now, you can say that we level up when we get a birthday, that we get better and that we things improve throughout the years, or you can say that we kind of move in a spiral. We prefer to think of leveling up, don't we? Because it shows natural progression and progress, and we love progress. And yet, I think sometimes we're more likely to move in spirals. I'm thinking now about this Psalm 27 and how it shows the ways that we move through life, not one step at a time, getting better and better all the time, but spiraling in and out and around. If you still have the psalm open, take a look at verse 1 there. God is my light and salvation. Whom shall I fear? The stronghold of my life. It's Psalm 27 if you're trying to get back to it. Who shall I be afraid? You know, if you were thinking about the stages of grief, you might think, oh, this is that stage called denial. Don't you think? It sounds a little bit like whistling in the dark, doesn't it? Oh, nothing can frighten me. But who shall we be afraid of? Oh, here they are in verse 2 and 3. Evildoers, adversaries, and foes who devour my flesh. Yikes. Those are some pretty bad adversaries. And in our lives, we have encountered such adversaries. Illness, addiction, violence. Who or what is devouring your flesh? And how do you respond? Possibly in this unexpected way. Here, this really horrible thing is happening, and yet in verse 4, one thing I ask of God that I will seek after, to live in the house of God all my life. So the psalmist isn't saying here, I want to destroy my adversaries or I want to overcome them. Instead, the psalmist is saying, okay, I want to turn toward God. I want to fill my life with God's light and love. And this is what keeps the singer safe, not defeating the enemies, but going undercover with God. So here it says, God will conceal me in the tent. God will set me high on a rock. So both hidden under and set above in the safety of God. And then, just as quickly as in our own lives, the psalmist feels that beautiful, comforting presence kind of slipping away. When it says, hear, O God, I seek your face. Do not turn your face from me. Do not cast me off. Then it says, if mother and father forsake me. Remember that in this time, the most significant unit was a unit of family. And so to be cast out from family would be to be cast out from everything that was protective and supportive. The enemies are all around. And yet the psalmist asks for something unexpected here in verse 11. Teach me your way, O God. Teach me your way. Show me, open your way to me. Ending then with this beautiful line, I will see God in the land of the living. The psalmist spirals around and around, in and out of despair, in and out of hope, connected, cut loose, surrounded by enemies, protected by God. So often we are in that same kind of spiral, aren't we? Sometimes even in the same day. So we've been talking about our birthday today, our leveling up. 125 years ago tomorrow, 20 people representing 12 families and a single gentleman attended worship for the first time and also for the second time because they had worship twice in those days, once in the morning and once in the evening. For being born in this century, once again, we say, thanks be to God. So, they were there at the Knights of Pythias Hall, probably down on 5th and Main. From that baker's dozen of households, this church, First Congregational Church, then called Pilgrim Congregational Church, was born. The group continued to meet regularly every several months. For several months, every Sunday, every single Sunday, morning and evening, and Thursday evenings for Bible study until spring of that year, when the church history says, and I'm going to quote from church history here, but don't fall asleep, it's very exciting. Fun-loving congregationalists cannot stay serious too long, and May 14th prayer meeting, that was a Sunday, the Thursday night prayer meeting, was set aside to hold a sociable. Fatalists might well believe it was due to this that we find the following Sunday noted in the minutes. There was no preaching service at 11 a.m. or in the evening on account of the preacher failing to come. Oh, little church, less than 6 months in and already the spiral has begun. A night of fun on Thursday and a disappearing pastor on Sunday morning. On January 3rd, 1894, a committee was formed to look out for strangers. Oh, I love that line so much. Look out for strangers, not to look within, but to look out, outside of our own doors and walls. Surely a sign of growth and strength, wouldn't you say? But all through that year and the next, there was talk of disbanding. But by 1896, a new pastor was called, although benevolences were cut from 7 organizations to 3 organizations. Land was purchased, the church name was changed, pastors came and went, some more gracefully than others, I do have to say. A building was erected, and always, 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 the presence of that old adversary and foe that always tears at the flesh of every Protestant congregation of my experience. Will there be enough money to get it all done? But here's the thing. God was present in all of that. The church minutes, which is where we usually get our history, of necessity record the business of the church. But they also record this: outreach, mission, projects, programs, worship, and prayer. In spite of financial strain and personal and personnel conflict, in spite of the turmoil around the building of this very structure, about which our history devotes a single line, due to a large discrepancy between the architect's estimate and the low bid contract, much of the building had to be left for volunteer help to finish. Oh my goodness. This church you literally, literally built with the sweat of your brows, people. In spite of it all, or within it all and around it all, the congregation kept singing this song from the Psalms: I believe I will see the goodness of God in the land of the living. So Christina and I are both revealing our deep, innate nerdiness this morning. So since she just talked about video games, I'm going to talk about Doctor Who, which is a British time travel show that I love. And the Doctor is like a 1,000-ish-year-old man, and he travels all of time and space. No, he's not a man. He's an alien. He travels all of time and space in a royal blue time travel device that looks like a British call box. Everybody's just looking at me like, what are you talking about? I'm getting there. So once asked to describe how time travel works, the Doctor replied, people assume that time is a strict progression of cause to effect. But actually, from a non-linear, non-subjective viewpoint, it's more like a big ball of wibbly, wobbly, timey-wimey stuff. On our birthday, it's tempting especially to imagine that we're leveling up, that time is a strict progression of cause to effect. Every day and every way, we're getting better and better. But really, our story is a spiral, or as the Doctor would say, a big ball of wibbly, wobbly, timey-wimey stuff. We are circling around and around, good times and bad, despair and hope, parties and missing ministers, beautiful new creations, and then strong hands to build them. Vigorous faith and animated doubt both demand that we take God seriously, ask God real questions, and depend upon God in tangible ways. Faith is not simply about believing or not believing. In fact, faith isn't really a doctrine at all. It is about the truth of what we have known and lived and seen and done and felt and been. The life of faith is grounded in experience, real mystery, awe, pain, and the grace that comes around and around and around in this 125th year and every year before that. Jesus, in the reading that Arlene shared with us this morning, is speaking to the Pharisees. What a spiral he's been in with that group. Old friends, new enemies. They follow him secretly, and then they betray him into the arms of the empire. Maybe he was thinking of this psalm, this song of spirals in and out of despair and hope, when he called out to them, "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills its prophets and stones those who are sent to it. How often I have desired to gather your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings." Barbara Brown Taylor, the awesome preacher and writer, describes the psalm in this way, or the gospel reading in this way. If you have ever loved someone you could not protect, I'll say that again so you can let it sink in. Who have you loved that you could not protect? Then you understand the depths of Jesus' lament. All you can do is open your arms. You cannot make anyone walk into them. Meanwhile, this is the most vulnerable posture in the world. Wings spread, breast exposed. But if you mean when you say, then this is how you will stand. Jesus won't be the king of the jungle in this or any other story. He will be a mother hen who stands between the chicks and those who mean to do them harm. She has no fangs, no claws, no rippling muscles. All she has is her willingness to shield her babies with her own body. If the fox wants them, he will have to kill her first, which he does, as it turns out. He slides up to her on a night when all the babies are asleep, and when her cry wakens them, they scatter. And she dies the next day, where both foxes and chickens can see her wings spread, without a single chick beneath her fingers, without a single chick beneath her feathers. It breaks her heart, but if you mean what you say, that is how you stand. See, we are here in this place, spiraling around through good days and bad. Sometimes we scatter, sometimes we huddle close. Sometimes we know that God is nearby, as near as our breath. Sometimes God is so far away. Sometimes we are playing together on Thursday night and by Sunday morning are unable to pray in the company of one another. But in all of our 125 years, and in the 125 before that, and the 125 to come, hear this word of hope, of faith. The divine is always here, arms held out, ready to draw us in, to keep us under cover. Let us spiral ever nearer to those waiting arms, into the land of the living. Amen.